Hi, everybody. This is Kevin O'Donoghue, licensed New York State mental health counselor.
And this is Nasima Diane Deemer, licensed massage therapist and trauma specialist. And this is The Positive Mind.
Bringing you some ideas, concepts, some guests, help you lead a more positively minded life. And we are in week 8 now of the pandemic crisis, and we're trying to check in with you. How are you? How's your rhythm? Have you got rhythm? Are you in a kind of rhythm? You know, I was saying last time that each week seems to be different. And this week, you know, the idea that occurred to me was rhythm. We're 8 weeks in. Have you caught your rhythm? Do you feel like you're in some kind of rhythm? The word rhythm just came to me, you know, Nasima. Each week it's a different feeling, a different sense. And the word rhythm, I mean, it's just like, I seem to have finally gotten into the rhythm. I'm not fighting it as much. You know, I think I'm sort of settling down. So the word rhythm is the theme for our show today, and we want to see, what is your rhythm? Have you caught the rhythm? And if you haven't caught the rhythm, you know, maybe that says something about your psychology. Maybe it says something about you. It's okay. I mean, it took me, I'm in the 8th week now, to really feel like I'm finally in a kind of rhythm and not reactive. So everybody has their own pace. Maybe you were in the rhythm in week 1, week 2. But it occurs to me, you know, if you're not in rhythm at this point, maybe there's an explanation for it. Maybe there's a reason for it. You know, I was in all of these Zoom groups that everybody's in. I was in a Zoom group last week, and the question was for the whole group, and there was 28 people, how you're reacting to this pandemic echo how you were as a child? For instance, are you reacting to this pandemic in a way similar to the way you reacted to things as a child? And it was fascinating, 28 different versions of how they reacted. I mean, I know for myself, you know, I was raised with a bunch of brothers, big family, and we always poo-pooed the idea of taking care of yourself or taking anything out in the public seriously, what the news is telling us. So it took me a while to get into the rhythm, take in what the public was saying, take in what the media was saying. And I immediately connected to the fact that that's how I operated as a kid. So it occurs to me, like, rhythm, taking this long for me to get into the rhythm, is really acknowledging the fight I've had with this whole public spectacle, this whole public pandemic. And I'm wondering about you, our listeners out there, are you finally in a rhythm? Are you not in a rhythm? What does a rhythm feel like? You know, what does it feel like? Are you in a rhythm? Right? When I think of rhythm, I immediately think of a drum beat. I think of music. You know, we were born in sound. We were born in the, you know, we were in the womb in this slushy paradise where, I don't know, Nasima, is sound the first sense that babies in utero have?
It's one of the first senses that that come online is sound. Babies can hear everything. I mean, and the main thing that they're hearing is the sound of the mother's heartbeat, the mother's breath, and the movement of the blood through the placenta. So
they even hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, the whooshing.
And of course, they talk about the value of music to babies in utero.
Yeah.
And talking to your baby.
And playing music and
feeding
and
singing them beautiful sounds.
Yeah.
In utero. And they have done studies that where babies outside of the womb finally being born and then playing the music that you played at 3 months or 6 months while they were in utero, that they immediately get stimulated and their eyes raise.
Well, they also say that a lot of language patterning starts happening in utero because they're hearing the language of the parents, language of the society, right, the language that's being spoken. So the sounds are getting sort of laid into the early neural networks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sound is huge. And they found that sound helped calm, and music helped calm babies in you know, in ICU units, you know, NICU units. It helped them so much and helped them to thrive.
Let's hear a little music. That, are you getting the rhythm?
It's the
right, and what, it is a not a healthy heartbeat, but that's a heartbeat.
No, it's a healthy. There's a healthy heartbeat in there.
I hope yours isn't beating like that, but it could be at certain points. You know, I mean, there are whole albums of this kind of drum music. This is particularly Native American, but there's all types of drum albums, and we want to give you a sense of. Rhythm, the idea of rhythm. Do you hear a drum like that going all day long for yourself? Do you hear a different type of drumming sound during your day? How about this one? That's the going to work drum beat. That's a subway drum beat.
And you might sort of notice what happens in you as you listen to the different paces of drums and rhythms. And does it help sort of organize you, get you motivated? Well, you know, today's show, we really are going to look at this idea of rhythm and how our rhythms have maybe changed or been disrupted because of this. Like if you were somebody who was getting up every morning, going to work, having like a busy job, a labor job, your rhythm has been dramatically changed. And that can be very disconcerting. And it can be hard to get used to. Like you said, it took you about 8 weeks. It took me probably about 6 weeks to get used to this new rhythm.
While we're talking about this, is there a practice that people could do to sort of get themselves, get their body into rhythms? You know, we talk about meditation, dance, yoga, you know, physical expressions and things. Ultimately, that what? That get us centered and balanced and grounded, And get us ready for a rhythm. I like to think of it this way. I mean, so many things are being discovered. Everybody is sort of personally discovering things through this. I know I'm having my own insights about my own life and ways I want to improve it and do better and change things. And things that are coming up is valuable to me, not just as have-tos I have to do, but it's valuable to me. And I think getting in rhythm, following a rhythm is emerging now for me as something valuable. And I'm asking, is there some, like practices and things people do to try and get themselves into rhythm?
Well, I think you mentioned quite a few of them. And those practices are all sort of about tuning into yourself and maybe getting a sense of what's your rhythm, what's your, you know, your inner rhythm. I think we have been so pushed by the rhythm of our society, our economy, our drive. You know, as a country, we're very driven and accomplishment-oriented and, you know, on the capitalist side of, you know, economics.
Yes.
And having to halt all of that so abruptly, I think, put a lot of people in sort of a state of shock. To a degree, and then losing jobs and all of that sort of compounds the sense of shock. And as it started to melt and people have gotten into maybe a different flow or rhythm, maybe they're discovering their own sort of like way they want to be. others might be completely lost. Like, my tendency is that I do appreciate that external rhythm to help get me moving and yes. into a certain, you know, pacing. And it took a while for me to, again, like, thank God I have a dog that was waking me up in the morning to go right. out. You know, sometimes those external things help you. But maybe you're starting to feel like, this is more my rhythm. And wouldn't it be nice to keep some of this? Maybe people can write down sort of like, what's their best day look like? And is there any way to sort of move that into a reopened economy? I don't know.
Yes. And so we're seeing signs of a reopening. And we want to talk a little bit about a change of rhythm. You know, it's coming into work today. I mean, there are more cars on the road. And I immediately felt a contraction. You know, I reacted because there's nothing like getting on a highway and nobody's on it. Yeah. There's no cars.
Right.
What does that feel like? How was that for you out there, right? You get on a highway that's, you know, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's still empty.
I can imagine the people in LA are just like,
right.
What?
Imagine a six lane highway with nobody on cars. It. You could do figure eights on it. don't recommend that.
No.
But I'm saying, you know, so what's that feeling like to get on a highway and not see anybody and any cars? It was an expansiveness. So today when I saw these tail lights in front of me, people entering from the entranceway, you know, I felt my body get back. I said, I tensed up. There was a contraction.
Right.
So how do I keep my rhythm? I was doing so well. My rhythm was like right on. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's interfered. It's interrupted.
And maybe your like road rage starts coming back. Like there's been probably a period of time here where people haven't had road rage because there's been nobody to rage at on the road. So yeah, I think you bring up something really interesting. It's like since there's been this kind of quieting of everything, now as the pace starts to pick up, you might take a moment to sort of notice how your body, how your mind, how your mentality, you know, is responding to that, because guess what? That's kind of probably how you were before this. And we get it. We've had such a contrast here in these last 8 weeks, and now it's coming back. We might just sort of notice, like, what are we willing to tolerate going forward and what aren't we? Like, there might be a little bit of a chance here. You know, it was just so ingrained. It was so habitual before.
Yes.
Now it's gone and it's starting to come back, and it's like, oh, again, like kind of what I said before, how can I keep a sense of my own rhythm and move back into the pace of society?
Yes, and I think it's not too late, Nassima. You know, it's not happening immediately. So I think for our listeners today, we want to say it's not too late to discover your own rhythm, you know, and to see what you're learning as we have another week of being socially distant and separate and having our own sort of schedules. We still aren't back in, you know, functioning mode, and we're still allowed to function at our own pace in many, many ways. It's not too late to tune into the kind of rhythm that works for you now, these next couple of weeks, and see how much of that you can bring to when we go back online and as we gradually go back online. Because like I say, I do think people are discovering a lot of things about themselves. You know, last week I said you turn right and I'm right there. And I turn left and I'm right there. And it's like I'm surrounded with me all the time. And while that's a drag, you know, it's really not fun. You know, it can be tedious and gets tiresome. There's a lot I'm learning, and there's a lot to learn. And so we want people to say, you know, okay, I'm learning a lot. I'm learning at my pace, how it is when I'm not pressured to be in an office on a clock at somebody else's, you know, demand. And how well do I function? How can I function, get the job done, and do it in my own pace, my own rhythm?
And I can imagine one difficulty that a lot of people are probably running into is like, yeah, I mean, it's great on one level to have all this time to be able to tune into yourself, but I'm sure there's an undercurrent of fear about their economics. Like, do they, I'm sure there's a large portion of people who are unemployed. I mean, there's millions of people unemployed. And that sort of fear and anxiety about when is the job going to come back, when I'm going to be able to feed my family, how, you know, that's going to be underlying. So I just want to acknowledge that, that it might be difficult to do what we're asking, but to just encourage you to take a few moments every day to just drop in and try to feel, what is my rhythm? What is the music I like to listen to that really makes me feel good, that makes me feel like I can slow down and feel myself?
You make me think of our next piece. Satie, Jim Nepeti's one. Is there a rhythm to that? There is. You know, my gosh, my heart rate certainly slowed down there. And you know, the piano is a percussive instrument.
Yes. And I feel like it's that kind of music, putting on that kind of music, gives us an opportunity to slow down. Yeah. And when you slow down, you feel yourself. And we talked a little bit about that last week and what you were just saying, you know, I turn right, there I am, I turn left, there I am. Like, as you slow down, as life isn't keeping you busy, you may start to feel yourself. And this is one way to do that. And something that I also feel about what's happened in our time is that we were so abruptly stopped in our economy. Like, everything stopped really quickly. And that's a hallmark of a traumatic impact?
That is a trauma, isn't it? It was a trauma. Yeah. And so I think we can all say we've experienced a trauma.
Yes. And the freeze and the shock that maybe some of us might be feeling, especially in losing our jobs.
Yes.
And having to deal with this pandemic suddenly being here, is something that can sort of register in our nervous system and cause us to feel a little frozen, a little staccato, maybe a little bit hypersensitive. And hypervigilant too.
Yes.
And so music like that can really help us start to slow down. And you might, do a little bit of slow movement with it. It's something called slow flow to help reintroduce this idea of flow. And I know, Kevin, you want to talk about that.
Yes.
On a mental level.
You know, in mental health, flow, Czesnaminski wrote a book called Flow. As a concept in the late 90s, I think. And it's finding your rhythm, no matter what is going on, where you can lose yourself. The state of flow is where you merge with whatever it is you're doing. And I mean, this is an ideal mental state for people. People who love their job, people who love whatever activity, gardening, painting, whatever they're raising their children, whatever they're doing, where they lose the boundary of themselves in a positive way, and they merge with the activity, whatever it is they're doing. And I think there can be signals that can help us get to states of flow. I do think Erik Satie can immediately transform me, but there are times when I'm not ready to listen to Erik Satie, and I'm not responding to that music. My rhythm is so totally different that I'm not ready for that. But I think, you know, Nasima, you bring up a good point that, you know, we have experienced this trauma, and we can't state it in any better term. My question was earlier about how you're reacting to this pandemic is maybe a way you reacted to things, calamities in your childhood.
And just the rhythm of your childhood, the culture of your childhood.
And it made me think, well, were you in rhythm with your environment at home growing up? Were you in the rhythm of your childhood home, or were you out of rhythm? And so if you were out of rhythm, it would make sense that you're out of rhythm and took a while for you to get into a rhythm during this pandemic. No judgment on that. It's just that's the way it was. I know many people who were just not in the rhythm of their upbringing. They were on a totally different track, listening to their beating to their own drum, as they say. So the same thing with getting back into a certain rhythm here as we open up a bit, and that transition and having to adjust to that, and how difficult is that going to be for you, could be a signal of, you know, you not being in the rhythm, having the practice of being in rhythm in childhood, not having the practice now. But I did want to say something about trauma and how do people react to that word? I know men, like, we have a hard time acknowledging, yes, this has been a trauma for me. This is traumatic. And I just wish we had a different word for it. It's been a drama for me. How's that? and we could acknowledge this has been a drama. And I think everybody's had their own separate drama with this. And it has produced fears and anxieties and contractions and being out of balance and not being in a rhythm. So I wanted to acknowledge that. And, you know, maybe how you react to the word is something that you could track back to your history. So let's talk about rhythm and getting back or getting a certain rhythm for the rest of our show, how people can get into a rhythm. We think that music is one way to do it. But we should give a little science to this as well, you know. I mean, there have been so many studies, and I think it's really being researched a lot now. First of all, music with Alzheimer's patients, you know, they're finding that having a slow, steady pace of music in the background of an Alzheimer's ward and an Alzheimer's patient, even a parent in your own home, that if you're playing a certain type of rhythmic music, I'm trying to find that it has a very soothing effect and it has a memory impact. It's improving the memory of Alzheimer's victims. And so this is something that can be researched. You can check it out for yourself. You know, my mom had Alzheimer's, and I, you know, one thing that she responded to very strongly was music from her own time, you know, the 40s and 50s, when she would go out dancing with my dad. So, and she was sharper and she was more present. You could feel her being there when she was listening to that kind of music. So I knew that sort of anecdotally, but they're finding scientific research that a certain type of drum beat, a certain type of frequency for Alzheimer's patients, Alzheimer's victims, that it improves memory for children. Yes, go ahead.
And it improves so many outcomes in so many things. For children, they were showing how if they were playing music while a child was getting an infusion or an IV or a shot or something,
like
they just took it
shot.
So much easier. They felt more at ease. The treatment was more effective. I mean, music touches us in so many ways. And really encourage, you know, like, have you been listening to your music? Have you been listening to the news more than music? Like, Turn off the news, put on some music, get back to you and your rhythm, and the things that you like, the music that makes you feel like you.
They found, let's see, at Beth Israel Medical Center, Louis Armstrong Center for Music and Medicine conducted a study, 272 premature babies, 32 weeks gestation or older. Three types of music soothed the baby. A lullaby selected and sung by the baby's parents. An ocean disc, a round instrument, like a drum, that mimics the sound of the womb. Or a gatto box, a drum-like instrument used to stimulate two-tone heartbeat rhythms. They found them all effective, that the baby's breathing and heart rhythms improved with the sound of these three things. But they found, of course, which one do you think?
The lullaby.
Yes, the parents' lullaby. It helped the baby stay quietly alert, improved their sucking behavior, and it lowered the parents' stress.
Well, that's really interesting to me because the parent's voice and vocal prosody are hallmarks of social engagement and feeling safe in the world. We, you know, as people who are on the radio, anybody who's communicating any information to you, if they can do it in a vocally prosodic way, which includes changing rhythms in how you're speaking and also changing tones, tonality. So if somebody's speaking in a monotone, single sort of rhythm way, they're kind of firing at you, it just doesn't, it hits a nerve, right?
Right.
But if somebody speaks with vocal prosody.
What is prosody? Say, what does that word mean? Like prose in poetry?
Well, prosody means kind of what I said. There's a varying rhythm. And there's a varying tonality. So it's speaking kind of in a rhythmic way, in a musical way, that really helps. It goes directly to our vagus nerve. It goes through the ear. Again, we're talking about sound and music. The ear stimulates the eardrum. And when that eardrum is able to be stimulated and responding to the human voice, it stimulates the vagus nerve and makes you feel safe. This is
a huge discovery. I find your voice to be prosodic.
Yeah, I work on it. I try.
Do you really? Because
yeah,
it seems so natural to you, your modulation of voice and your precision.
Yeah.
And the
sound. Especially when I'm talking about prosody, I try to make it very prosodic so people understand.
But actually, it's the vagus nerve, which is really where you like to go and talk about. We should have a bell. Every time you get to say vagus nerve, I get to hit the bell because that's something you really like to talk about.
Well, it's a really important part of what's going on for us and how to be able to move out of that hypersensitive, hypervigilant state that I imagine a lot of people are in because of what's happened. A lot of really tough, hard things have happened. It's very traumatic. And when we go into that state, we're in our fight or flight, and that's not good for your immune system.
So, Nasima, there's so much science on this. I'm tempted to cite the article that we have here. Even with Parkinson's patients, their symptoms improve they're finding less rigidity. Children in pediatric wards, 42 children ages 3 to 11, listen to relaxing music while getting an IV inserted, reported significantly less pain. I always thought like distracting children when something difficult is going on is, you know, works. And I think many times children cry not because of any physical pain or what's going, that it's a psychological or emotional cry, and that if the adult handles it in the proper way, the child is not going to have a sustained cry.
Well, again, and like doctors who understand this quality of prosody or being playful with children during scary procedures, again, really like helps them tune into a different part of themselves and a distraction and a place that's they'll feel safer with that physician.
Yeah. I think doctors must learn hypnosis, you know, I mean, because they walk into a room, you know. If they have their own private practice, they're walking constantly into a new patient. I wonder, like, how many doctors, you know, how many patients a doctor sees per day. I know mine has six offices, and he's just rotating all day. And he kind of has to adjust to each patient, and there has to be a kind of hypnosis. I know my own doctor, he's sort of he doesn't, you know, he doesn't listen to the, you know, he'll listen to my symptoms and then he'll come up with some totally different idea that his mind is working on as I'm talking. So anyway, it's just this idea. I wonder if we should have a doctor in here and ask them about that practice. But I think this thing about distracting children is a sort of hypnosis that doctors need to learn as a way to soothe or soften treatments. Yes.
And something that's happening now as different patients are being released from hospitals, they're playing a song. Different hospitals are picking up a song, like in New York, you know, Alicia Keys, you know, Empire State of Mind.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And, you know, I Will Survive and all these different songs. And so every time it plays over the whole loud system and it plays over the whole hospital hears this song every time. And I think it's brilliant and it really brings everybody together in a celebration, which is something we're missing right now. And I think it probably helps other patients like feel like, wow, you know, somebody survived, I can survive, you know. And just hearing that music, I think, is so important.
What about
in their day?
7 o'clock drill. I mean, there's music.
Mm-hmm.
That's
there's
a musical
music
thing.
That and
the clapping and
the clapping and
pan
the
pounding and the singing. Some people are singing.
Yeah,
so I mean, it's a great excuse for people to come together and make sound together.
Yeah.
So let's try another piece, and see if that has the effect
this
on your
effect.
Nervous system. Thank you. So that was, what piece of music was that? Can we say the instrument?
It's the handpan.
We can come back and do right.
So stop, because he cross-faded it.
So that's a nice sound. That's a hang drum, right?
Yeah, it's a beautiful instrument that's used a lot for meditation and, you know, different sort of states, helping people, you know, move into more relaxed states.
Did you react to the boom in the background, the boom in the background? You know, music is a vibration. Ultimately, that's what it is. And they're finding, you know, that this vibration that music does is what is the curative factor. You know, so, I mean, they've done, and I don't know why all hospitals aren't loaded with music.
Right.
And changing the colors of the walls and the rooms, you know. Who knows? There's this whole science developing about this. But I was talking a little bit about even Parkinson's disease, you know, this 30 hertz vibration that they were alternated for 1 minute and 1 minute off, 1 minute on, 1 minute off for 10 minutes. And they found this, the result of this was less rigidity, more solid steps, less tremors, just 10 minutes. I mean, no medication, no drug. This is a vibration. And I wonder also, which they're not studying, but the effect of rhythm, you know, getting yourself into a frequency, getting yourself into a vibration with the environment, with your surroundings, as that is part of cure. Because, I mean, to get back to your childhood, if you fought the rhythm of your upbringing, right? I mean, consciously, unconsciously, if you kicked and screamed and pushed and pulled out of the rhythm of your childhood, you know, that has effects on your nervous system. So, you know, getting yourself into the rhythm of the environment, I think, hasn't been studied, but I think is important, is something to study.
Well, I think you bring up something interesting. Like, if you were someone who was out of step with the rhythm of your childhood, like maybe you were a slow person in a fast family, that could be very, very disorienting, very confusing. You would feel misattuned to that. Yes, there would be sort of an internal tension and anxiety about being so different. And if your parents aren't willing to sort of recognize that, or for you don't recognize that in your child and are able to adjust and acknowledge that, I think it's a missed opportunity of really feeling connected to your children. I mean, again, like, you can't slow down your whole family because one child moves a little slower, but just to acknowledge it and maybe, you know, create more time.
No, but I think that is good parenting, frankly, that, you know, parents who hold to a rigid program with all the children is not really being tuned in. And ultimately, being tuned in is what a parent needs to be. More than anything else. And, you know, all of your children are different.
Right.
And so you need to tune in to their rhythms. What is the rhythm of the third child, of the second child, the first child? How are they different? Not all the time, of course, but, you know, good parenting is differentiating parenting, recognizing the differences in the children. And adapting to them, and noticing them and saying them.
So I notice this in my practice, and I'm sure you do too, Kevin, that different clients have different rhythms and different ways of approaching their lives. And when they come into dialogue with you or treatment with you, you have to adjust as a practitioner. You have to adjust your rhythm to meet your client in so many ways. And it can be difficult. I get it. I get how hard it could be for a parent. I get how hard it could be for a grandparent. But, you know, it's something you have to be able to sort of ride with. And we create different rhythms in our day, but each client comes into that room with a different rhythm of their own.
Yes, and you have to, and each session with a different rhythm. You know, with the same client is a different rhythm each set. And yes, I think sessions do take on a rhythm of their own.
Mm-hmm.
So I love my work because I get to have different rhythms throughout the day. And being a sustained rhythm for 45, 50 minutes with one client, it's magic. It is musical.
Yeah.
You talked about the prosody, and there's a prosody. Did you say prosody or prosody?
Prosody.
Prosody of each session with a client. And they all have their own voice activation, you know, the sound of their voice. Each one is different. So I'm not like a doctor who just rotates for 3 minutes with a client, you know, patient and moves on to the next one. I think there's a skill in that. But I get to sit with 45, 50 minutes in a sort of a vibration mm-hmm. 8 times a day. So it's really quite magical. And of course, there are some whose frequency I can't get to at a certain point, like after lunch. You know, I've learned to have a lunch that's going to let me be in rhythm with my next client and not to have, something that's going to be totally alien to what I'm going to have to deal with in the afternoon. Yeah.
And, you know, rhythm and flow are something that I think unconsciously we're looking for in our clients and in their lives and how they're going about it. Now, specifically with trauma, when somebody's sort of caught in freeze patterns or hypervigilant patterns, we're looking to reestablish a sense of flow, to see if we can start to melt some of that freeze, to release some of the blocks, some of the fears, because fear will hold you in a really tight, contracted position. That's hallmark of fear.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like, how do we just sort of let that up a little bit at a time? And, you know, what's funny or not funny, I don't know, it was heartbreaking. Yesterday, I went to visit some very close friends of mine, and I stayed on the street, and they were on their stoop. It was so strange to come into contact. Like, there was some fear and anxiety in me. Like,
I haven't
seen them in so long. I didn't want to make them sick. I didn't know how, like, that whole social interaction was so awkward. Yeah. Like, we can't go up and hug. I can't, you know, like, have my arm around my friend or anything like that. It was so, I was kind of surprised at the feeling of sort of sadness that I felt, you know, a mix of sadness and fear and, you know, that distance felt so distant. And, you know, we just hung with it, I think, for a while. And
did you acknowledge it together and how awkward this was?
No, we did not. We didn't.
Would that have helped?
We acknowledged more of the sort of grand scheme of things. It may have. I mean, I think on some level we just did say how strange it is. But to really sort of say, gosh, you know, I'm so sad, I can't hug you.
And there's a rhythm of meeting people, right? Mm-hmm. The handshake, the hug, the fist bump. There's a sort of synchronization going on there when you first meet people. So when you haven't seen them in so long and then, you know, it interrupts that rhythm, as it were.
Right.
It just pronounces the awkwardness of it.
Yeah.
So, but there's types of rhythms, Nasima. There's always this personal rhythm that we can always adapt to and assess ourselves. How's my rhythm? Am I in a rhythm? When am I, you know, am I out of rhythm right now? And so, you know, there's a physical rhythm, right? You get yourself into step physically. And then there's a spiritual rhythm or a being rhythm where you orient your being in a certain frequency, at a certain rhythm. And then there's a social rhythm, which was a new concept to me before we did this, you know, we read up on this show. What is social rhythm?
Well, when I discovered it, I was like, wow, isn't this interesting? I'd never heard of this tool. But it's a tool that's used for bipolar disorders. And it's a way that someone who's struggling with bipolar can sort of chart their days and how they are engaging socially, what they're doing that they need to do. And I think it helps them sort of manage their moods. Like, okay, you know, today if I'm feeling, you know, more manic or energized or more slow and depressed, I have this checklist. What was I able to do? I was able to take a shower, go to bed, do like the basic things.
So the point is that no matter what a bipolar person is experiencing, that they're following through with certain activities, certain things. They do go to school. They do eat lunch. They do take a nap. They do get on the bus.
Right.
They do chores. They
go
do homework. They go to bed on time. They do exercise. They have dinner. They interact with others. So in spite of the disorder, and remember, bipolar disorder is a mood disorder, that you can eat your lunch and dinner and be angry or sad or excited. You know, or frightened. You can do these things. These are emotions. These are transitory. They're in motion, emotions. And so for the bipolar person, we're saying, yes, you have a disorder. It is a struggle. You are suffering. You can be suffering, but you do take deliberate steps to maintain a rhythm, a certain consistency in your day. You get out of bed. You do take a shower. You do eat your breakfast. You do interact. You do your responsibilities. You do these things.
And what I see that as is like it's creating a container. So in this container of my social rhythm, of my doing the things that you need to do and interact with the people I need to interact with, in spite of how I'm feeling, the mood starts to sort of channel all that energy that tends to erratically go high or low, starts to bring it into a specific cadent rhythm, like a boom, boom, boom. This is the process of my day. I'm going to do this at this time, and I do it, and I move through, no matter if I'm feeling high or low.
Right.
I still do these things. You know, and that's how rhythm can help you move back into life.
Yes. And I think it helps having a supportive person who knows your condition on the other side, so that when you are interacting with them, you can say, I don't feel this like doing this right now. And your supportive person on the other side, yeah, I know that, you know, but I'm here with you. And being allowed to say that out loud to a supportive person is grounding, you know, is a way, you know, it softens the mood. It softens your manic or depressive mood, being able to share it with somebody. I say I'm a big fan of speaking, you know, and speaking with people that know where you're at and aren't going to be reactive. They're just going to be there with you. They'll sit there with you. Okay, you're feeling really angry, you know, it doesn't faze me, you know. And I think that's a terrific assist, a terrific support to people who suffer from bipolar.
And this thing that you said about a groundedness – rhythm tends to ground us. Rhythm grounds the musical piece. It's what most music is created on, is that ground of a certain rhythmic structure.
Yeah.
And so when you have that rhythmic structure, you can then create your life on top of that in a musical rhythmic way. I mean, I just, you know, and we have this rhythm of our heartbeat. Like sometimes when I'm working with clients, one of the first things they notice that is, especially if they've been through a traumatic experience that was near death, when they feel the heartbeat, it's like, that's the rhythm of life that's telling me I survived. So if anyone out there listening has been through this ordeal or an ordeal with it, like, see if you can tune into that rhythm of your heart. Like, it's there. It's pounding. If you're alive, you have a heart that is beating at a rhythm. And that is what you can, like, ground yourself with. Like,
yes.
I'm here. My heart is beating. I'm here. I survived whatever happened to me.
Right.
I find that to be, like, such a wonderful thing when clients tune into their heartbeat. It's like, oh, wow. And what is your heart saying?
Yeah.
It's saying, I'm alive.
And I'm wondering, like, how many adults use musical aids, sound aids to go to sleep at night? You know, and this heartbeat sounds like such a soothing one that can help with sleep. I know I like to listen to ocean waves.
Yeah, and that's almost like a heartbeat.
You know, at night, it's a big, you know, it's an assist at times. So I'm sure with this ease of pressing the button and having music at your fingertips makes it easier for us adults to get into a rhythm as we slide off into sleep. So I'm wondering how many people out there are using that. I bet it's probably more than 10%.
Yeah.
But and growing, I'm sure. So Let's talk for the last portion of our show, Nasima, about this getting into this rhythm that's coming. Right? I mean, I noticed it today. It's very subtle, and I'm glad that it's subtle. Imagine if everything opened up right now.
That would be so shocking.
Talk about a shock, and we would do a show on shock. Because this is a mental condition. This is a significant jolt to the system and the psyche. So imagine that. We're not doing that. We're going it slow. But even slow, like I said, I noticed immediately a contraction and a fear, as you said, with your friends. How can we go into this slowly and ideally? What's the ideal way of reintegrating into a functioning social system?
Well, I kind of feel like if we were to apply sort of this idea of trauma healing, is that we do it in a titrated way. And the beauty of titration is that you introduce a little bit, you allow the system to integrate it, integrate the shift, and then you introduce a little bit more. So you kind of build capacity as you go. So we're at a really interesting point in this whole process where, yes, society's opening up. There might be an urge to open it all the way up, to just go right back, or, you know, and throw everything to the wind, and then we may crash again. And that's often what happens in traumatized individuals. Like, they'll feel a little bit of good, and then boom, they're right back into, like, all the overwhelm.
Okay.
And so it's like we have to sort of build our capacity. And in a way, we're going to sort of build the capacity of the nervous system and the system of our society to sort of be able to reintegrate back. Like, let's just take it slowly. We've got like these 2 week spans that they're sort of gauging everything on. We got to sort of hunker down and sort of ease into this, and we'll have a little more capacity as we go.
And as you're talking, I'm just thinking, and I can handle this.
Yeah.
Right? The sound, to have a sound for yourself, like, I can handle this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as one day leads to the next, 1 week to the, I can handle this.
Yeah.
I can handle this.
I can expand little by little into the return of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm wondering, you know, I'm liking my rhythm right now, you know? I'm not sure I want to. I know I don't want to go back, and maybe we'll never really go back the way it was. I think we've had a significant social experience, private, personal experience that, you know, we'll take with us going forward, and maybe create how we are going forward differently than if we never experienced this. So.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like I say, it's week eight, and I'm just now getting into the, which makes perfect sense for how I was raised, by the way. And I'm just echoing what we started the show with, like, how is how you adapted, adjusted, met this crisis, met this pandemic, echoing or traceable to how you were raised.
Right.
You know?
So I'm curious, how does this mimic how you were raised?
You know, I guess I'm a part of a percentage that just sort of didn't take it seriously. I'm not going to get it. This is for other people. I resisted wearing a mask. You know, I wear a mask now, and it's been required legally. But I just did not see what all the fuss was about. 2 or 3 weeks in, I thought certain stores would be open. I mean, I drove to, you know, a store, and of course it was closed. But, you know, I thought, of course, you know. So there's a certain blindness, you know, there's certain obliviousness.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I grew up in a tribe. I mean, I grew up in a community. I grew up with lots of brothers and sisters, a big family, that we created our own sort of communication system outside of, you know, the public system. So anyway, I think this is maybe why I got into psychology, because how am I out of sync with other people based on, you know, my experience of the environment I had growing up? I want to learn a different environment. I want to learn about people. I want to experience people.
So you know, it sounds
so
like
even at this late age, I'm still learning.
So it sounds like you kind of got into the rhythm of the world in this eighth week.
Eighth week, I'm in it.
Oh, yeah. So it took these weeks to sort of drop that and come into this.
And I like, you know, having more choices. Like, even though there's a limiting of choice that we've all experienced, there's also an expansiveness of choice. I'm choosing hours to work, not work. I'm choosing what is, I think, going to be what I want to spend my time on and what I don't. Not simply just moving from one activity to the next, but really deliberating and registering, is this satisfying me now? Do I want to do something else right now? Mm-hmm. So the lax of scheduling has made the proliferation of choice and a constant evaluation, a constant, you know, checking with myself, do I want to be doing this? Do I want to be doing that? And by the way, most of it is all constructive things. You know, I'm clearly seeing what is going to be nourishing and good for me and what is not going to be nourishing. So if I think I was caught up in the speed of the world, the rhythm of the world before the pandemic, I wouldn't be having this constant evaluation.
Right. And so it sounds like a really, again, like another way to use this time is to maybe write down those things you want to keep, the rhythm you want to keep.
Yes.
And the rhythm you want to integrate into life as it comes back.
And maybe make a soundtrack for yourself.
Yeah.
You have been listening to The Positive Mind. I am Kevin O'Donohue. Thank you for tuning in. If you have any comments about today's show, please send them to me at kevin@thepositivemind.com. That's kevin@thepositivemind.com.